This is Jason Marsden, the voice of Duke from G.I. Joe Renegades. You're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network. Yo, Joe.
That's right, folks. That was the voice of Duke from G.I. Joe Renegades, and we are now part of the Geekcast Radio Network. Welcome to you, to those of you that are listening to episode 19 of What's on Joe Mind. Like it or not, we're a fan cast about the world of G.I. Joe, as heard in 33 countries. And we proudly are being rebroadcasted by Inside Pulse, Stitcher Smart Radio, and Yo Joe. Now, if you're feeling like you're not hearing enough of Joe right about now, excuse us while we take care of business. You may fast forward about 7 minutes from now, and then maybe we'll be talking about Joe. You got it? Anyways, give or take, I'm your lord and evil master and apparently newly dubbed King Podcaster. And may I say to the poster that basically gave me this title, it is damn good to be the king, let me tell you. Thank you very much. So joining me tonight, as always, is our very own leadoff batter. And yes, folks, it is another sports reference. I'm sorry, what can I say? I have testosterone, I'm a guy. But for those of you overseas, Wiki, leadoff batter, or the name, Ricky Henderson, take your pick. You can figure it out, and you have learned something new for the day. But anyways, he's our number one in the lineup, and to prevent confusion, he never talks about himself in the third person. Everyone say hi to our showrunner, Greg.
Hey, everybody.
What's going on, Greg?
Hey, how's week one of softball coming along, Greg?
It went pretty well.
Oh, yeah?
We were supposed to have a doubleheader, but the second one got rained out, but we managed to finish the first one, and I went 5-for-6. So that's 5 hits, which means that's 5 toys going to Toys for Tots.
15 toys going to Toys for Tots.
15, yep. 15 toys.
5 hits, Greg?
Yeah, it was terrible. The team we were playing, it was their first time they've ever played together, and they've been practicing all summer long, and we beat them 21-2.
So it's pretty safe to say they're not making the playoffs.
Yeah, definitely not the playoffs.
Playoffs? Let's talk about
playoffs. That's just an excuse for Jim Mora.
Playoffs?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Can someone mention practice?
We're talking about practice.
Chuck not the game. Chuck doesn't know about that one. Yeah. And neither does Craig. So. Also, on a serious note, these two guys got to ride out Hurricane Irene. It's Justin and Chuck. Hey, how are things up there, guys? And how's Mother Nature treating you?
It's okay. My direct area got a glancing blow, but pretty much most of the state of Vermont got hammered. Within probably a 50-mile radius of me, I've got probably a dozen or two landmarks that I've known for the past 30 years that are totally wiped off the face of the planet right now. So that's a little bit weird to get my head around. But besides that, you know, I was a pretty lucky person. Personally, definitely an interesting experience. Living in Vermont, you don't expect to go through something like
that.
Oh,
yeah.
Like I said, luckily it didn't impact me or my family directly, which I'm very thankful for, but there are certainly a lot of friends and acquaintances in the area who it did impact, and a lot of landscape changing, which is really strange.
But, well, Chuck, so. you're riding out hurricanes and earthquakes. I mean, what's next for you?
Tsunami.
Oh, God, no.
Tsunami work would be bad, Chuck.
Yes, very bad.
Yeah, but no, as I mentioned on Twitter and Facebook, I had relatively little water in my basement. You know, nothing was damaged to any extent, and I think really that was more because in New York we've had like quite a number of rainstorms this season, and the ground was just wet and couldn't hold any, you know, because it was coming in up through the floor instead of through a window.
Wow.
Justin mentioned friends. I mean, I have a friend who lives in Connecticut, and I think this is going on day 4. He doesn't have any power, and it's ironic. He actually got married last summer in Brattleboro, Vermont.
Yeah, I know where that is. Yep.
Yeah, and I saw on the news...
That's underwater?
Forget underwater. There was this lovely bridge I actually have photos of on my Facebook page that is completely gone. And the whole place is just gone.
I'll be down there next week trying to assess the damage of our remote office down in Brattleboro and deciding where we're going to rebuild and how we're going to...
Some of our listeners may remember my grandparents live a little bit north of Brattleboro and south of where Justin is, actually. They're kind of in between the two. And Justin's company actually has an office in my grandparents' hometown. Yep. And so there's a lot of the Cold River, Saxons River, a lot of historic covered bridges that have been there just simply washed away, and traffic patterns have changed. And I'm just prayers and thoughts for everyone there that is having a rough time.
You
know,
definitely.
Yeah. And definitely, you know, also in upstate New York, the governor was on today and he said that while New York City and Long Island got off relatively fine, you know, upstate New York has been completely ravaged.
So, hey, if Formula One team Red Bull driver Mark Webber was as popular as this guy. Aussies all over the world be asking, who the hell's Mark Weber? So there you go, another tasteless Aussie sporting joke that only six listeners will get, so I can get around to introducing that English guy from the Fooshcast, and he's now our show's number two star, only behind Chuck. Please give it up for Craig.
Sorry, I fell asleep through the introduction. It was like 45 minutes long. I'm also a little disturbed about being right behind Chuck, but that's
okay. As rightly you should.
We figured that would wake you up.
I've never dealt with an earthquake, but I have been through hurricanes and stuff before, and it's crazy.
Typhoons so, down there. Know. Are there typhoons down there?
No, no, there's still
hurricanes. Sure, hurricanes? Okay.
Typhoon is the same thing, though, right?
Yes, it is. Like I said, but it rotates the other direction.
If I can just destroy what credibility I have built up. When Steve Irwin died, I was at a shopping mall with some friends, and it came on they had like a new TV going up in the food court, and it came on and said, Steve Irwin's just been killed, and almost as a chorus around the food court, you could hear all these people go, crikey. and then everyone just kind of looked at each other and you could hear it. I said it, and I said it without thinking, and then it's one of those things where, like, a blink later, you're like, wait, I should have said that. But at the same time, in that same instant, I'm acknowledging that around me, all of these people spontaneously...
Craig, why are you making my editing job tougher?
What did I say? What? Crikey's not a swear word. You're okay.
You dropped the S-bomb.
You did drop an S-bomb.
Yeah. Craig, don't you think you should also mention that you just uploaded part 3 of your 3-part Sigma 6 retrospective that features our very own Justin Bell as a
hey, we're talking about Joe now, guest?
That's true. I did upload it a couple of days ago. I sent it to Justin. But
I have no
it's fine. There's been important G.I. Joe movie news, like, ooh, look, he's wearing a hat or something.
Hey, they're walking to lunch or something. Come on, tell me some slack. Lady J's got long hair, for crying out loud.
Well,
national emergency.
Everyone stop the press.
Oh gosh, here comes a train. Hey, we do got to get the contact information out of the way so we can introduce our guests. So how about we do that?
As long as they haven't fallen asleep, yeah.
Okay. As you heard from Jason Marsden in our opening, we are now part of the GeekCast Radio Network. The GeekCast Radio Network features multiple flagship podcasts, which includes ours, covering Transformers, cartoons, movies, television, general geek topics, and interviews with many famous voice actors from some of your favorite shows. So go there now and unleash your inner geek. Unleash the geek in you. By the time you hear this podcast, they'll be debuting a new version of their website, so go check it out at geekcastradio.com. And while you're there, tell them how much you enjoy What's On Joe Mine. Email us at whatsonjoemine@gmail.com. Text or leave us a voicemail at 262-515-WOJM. The last four digits again are 9656. We're also on facebook.com/whatsonjoemine. Find our links to our Podbean site, where you can find all our links. Additionally, for our social networking profiles and active forum threads for such forums as Joe Declassified, Project ARAH, Kitty's Pride, and the G.I. Joe Collectors Club, if you can find it.
That's a low blow, Gary.
Hey, got an Apple device? Go to iTunes Store and subscribe to the show. And if you feel so inclined, please leave us a nice review and ranking. We would appreciate it. Hey, Chuck.
Hey, Gary.
Hey, you told the world you have a BlackBerry phone, right?
Yes, I do.
You have Stitcher yet?
Unfortunately, no. I should
be. Well, why not? Did you know that Stitcher is a free app in your apps market, so you don't have to pay a cent for it?
I did know that, Gary.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I don't
have Please tell me again.
In fact, Gary, for all the listeners who may not know, tell us more about Stitcher.
That's right. Stitcher is on-demand news, talk, sports, and more right to your mobile phone and or car stereo and select GM and Ford models. The latest episodes are always available. No syncing or storage is needed. In addition to Chuck's BlackBerry, it's also available for Apple WebOS and Android devices. Stitcher Smart Radio and What's On Your Mind. Together, we are the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, on this podcast, I would say combined between all of us, we have roughly 80 years of collecting experience. Would we say that's a fair number?
Yeah, it's pretty close, probably.
Let me see here. 30.
Carry the 30, one. Every, yeah, okay.
Get out the calculator.
90, 100, 110, 120, 130, 140. How about 150?
Well, we will go with that, Chuck. At this point, probably maybe we've seen it all, right?
Absolutely.
Well, chances are we have never seen G.I. Joe get the onstage musical treatment, have we?
Well, unless you count Snake Eyes breakdancing in that one Sunbow episode.
We've established the cartoons count for nothing.
But wait a minute, you have to also count Cold Slither. I mean, that was...
And at the cartoon, it counts for nothing.
cartoon counts a lot for me.
Oh, okay.
Don't hurt his feelings.
Yeah, I know. We got...
Still got a lot of show left.
Yeah, I know. We need him here. On the line from... all this is about to change, actually, because on the line from the Chicago area and joining us as special guest tonight, representing the stage production of Yo! Joe, a real American hip-hop musical, our show creator and director, Jay Gish, and the actor playing the alter ego of Gung Ho, also known as Full Bore, Dave Stecko. They are here to tell us all about it. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks for having us. The cartoons are canon.
Oh, here we go. It's on.
Okay. I've only met you 5 minutes ago. You're already my favorite person in the world.
All right. Jay, first question is for you. So why a musical about G.I. Joe?
Well, I mean, I gotta be honest, the cartoon did figure pretty heavily into my experience with G.I. Joe, too. It was actually suggested by someone else at the theater company. They thought a G.I. Joe musical would be fun. And I said, well, I write some music, I write some scripts, let me give a crack at it. And it just... Yeah, it seemed like the idea was hilarious and too good to pass up, and I love the characters, I love the figures, I love the design, so I just put my nose to the grindstone and kicked it out.
How long is your musical going to be? Like, is it a couple of acts, a couple of hours? How many songs? Give us details.
It's a full two-act musical. I mean, I know a lot of them on Broadway are three. This one's two. Runtime is... we haven't nailed it down entirely yet, but it's about an hour and a half. So it's an evening of entertainment that I think everyone will be satisfied with. There are 10 songs in the score, about 16 scenes. I'm also trying to get done an entire pre-show overture of original hip-hop music. Not Joe-related specifically, but lots of 80s references and samples from 80s songs. So I want the whole thing to be, you know, an entertainment package of nostalgia for the time when the cartoons were king and none of us had to worry about whether there were non-animated Joe movies out there.
Jay, something I'm not sure if the guys are aware of, I too have tried my hand at writing a musical.
Oh, Lord.
Ooh. It's called Chuck, A Man and His Guitar, and well, I wanted to actually...
I don't like where this is headed.
It features songs like Up Chuck.
Jay, you may want to get comfortable. That was the first and only song I could think of. Make their rounds, making jokes. Okay, well, what I want to discuss with you is, like, what goes into writing the songs. I mean, do you have the song and then apply it to a character, or do you have the character and then you need to write a song for them?
You know, when it comes to writing them for a musical like this, I find, you know, if you get an outline of the show done first, which not everybody does it that way, but I do it that way because I kind of like everything to make sense and be a little less work for me, and I find outlining an easy way to get into it. You'll come to scenes and just sentences, snips of dialogue, or summations of those scenes will just kind of float in your head, and a lot of times those make good titles, or close to good titles. And once you have a title, for me, that's kind of where I start with a lot of the songs. And then every once in a while, this is a hip-hop musical, so it's... a lot of it's rap, which is not to scare anybody away. It's really pop music. It's just that almost none of it's sung. Sometimes you'll just have samples sitting around. You'll be working with your stuff, and you're like, oh, that sounds great. I've got a great beat put together. I don't know what I'm going to do with that. So you'll keep it on your hard drive, and later you'll pull it up, and that'll spark something. You just get a line, a lyric, and you'll build the song from there. Girl Talk does that, if anybody knows about him. He'll have just snippets of tons of songs sitting on his hard drive, and then he'll go back to them later.
I just actually have a follow-up. Seeing as how that you mentioned your... you draw a lot from the 80s cartoon. I think as anyone who's watched an episode, a lot of all the characters were portrayed as very over the top, but of course the villains were really over the top. Cobra Commander, Destro, Baroness. Did you find it easier to write for the villains as opposed to the good guy G.I. Joe characters, or did it just work its way out?
You know, I think that's probably true. I probably can't came up with the scenes for Commander faster, just because, like you say, his character has such a big hook. It's so big. Maybe Dave can speak to how he feels coming out the other side of this, whether the Joism had given fair shrift. Yeah. I thought Dave's character had a lot, was easy to write for, too, because Gung-Ho / Full Bore is also one of the bigger people in the cast.
Yeah, the Cobra, or for our purposes, the Python agents, really, they get absolutely amazing numbers. And they all, because they do have such individually developed personalities, which isn't to say the Joes don't, but I mean, I guess part of the ethic is that the Joes are this team.
They're a team.
And they do things together, whereas the Cobra is always trying to pick itself apart, you know, despite its best efforts. You know, everyone's got their own angle, and I think that's probably makes it easier to write for individuals in that case.
I could throw in a sports metaphor here if it would make you more comfortable, Gary.
Do it.
We like sports metaphors.
So the Joes are like the, let's say like the Patriots, where it's an oiled machine.
Oh, Jesus. Okay, now, okay. No. Move on. They're just bitter Bears fans up there because we beat them in the Super Bowl. Move on. Justin, it's actually your turn to ask a question. Sorry, guests.
I'm basking in the Super Bowl. Patriots, that's...
what I'm going to do is now edit it out, and every time Justin says Patriots, you'll hear Indianapolis Colts.
You could just mention the Lions.
Yeah.
Why would we?
That's a crazy game. Come on.
You could just bleep him, and it'll sound like he swears more than I do.
Yeah, that's true. Good
point. Now, you guys, obviously, you mentioned it a little bit on the fringe there, calling Cobra... The pythons, or how are you kind of getting around the trademark issues, and are you at all worried about Hasbro's reaction to this, or if anything might come of it legally, or what's how are you kind of dancing around that subject?
I'm not too worried. If you're in the Chicago area, you'll find that parody musicals come out every couple of years at least. There was a Karate Kid musical here, there was a James Bond musical. In most cases, they're actually a little more direct than we're being, and they don't usually get hassled. Just to give us the extra space, and because I also read Mad Magazine as a kid, I took the initiative to just change the names a little bit. They're obvious parodies of the names, so no one's going to mistake anybody. I think we probably would have been fine even using the names. I know there was an infamous Simpsons episode where they did a Streetcar Named Desire as a musical, and if you listen to the director's commentary on that, they'll talk about how they were free to use the characters as long as they wrote new material. So that's pretty much where we're sitting on this. It's a parody. It's a musical. Uh-huh. I don't anticipate a lot of trouble, but I wanted to mess with the names anyway.
I personally welcome some serious legal action, and I'll tell you why, because it would mean that we're
success. It's true. No.
They'll only come after us if we're really doing a good job.
Well, guys, we do have listeners in and around the Pawtucket area, so you never know.
We may have just busted you wide open.
Sorry. While we're talking about characters, I mean, in the full likenesses, Dave, are we going with shaved chest and a Marine logo on our chest?
Oh, boy.
Such an excellent question.
Yeah. Let's get down to the nitty-gritty. Tell me.
I'm committed to this. I am a hairy-chested man.
All right.
And I had committed to getting my chest waxed for this.
Ooh.
In having videotape for posterity.
And for humor.
And for humor. And for my squealings and cries for clemency. But no, it turns out that to wax a man's chest is like $45. To wax a man's chest and not his back just seems weird. So we're looking at a $90 buy-in for waxing service, at which point I instantly lost interest in the entire project. The pain I'm fine with, but it's the $90 I have better uses for.
Plus, wouldn't you have to do it, like, relatively regularly in order to, you know, how many times are you doing the show?
Yeah, I was shocked. I've asked around, and there's no better way to get to know people than ask them about the waxings. I thought you waxed and it was, like, better than a laser. I thought that'd be good for, like, 6 months. But no, it's just like shaving, only more painful and more expensive.
Awesome.
You will be in a vest.
Yeah, there will be a vest.
Yeah,
there
we got it today.
There's going to be a globe and anchor.
Awesome. Very cool.
I am committed to that. Yes.
Why don't you shave it into your chest hair? Like shave the outline. Right.
No.
I had to get an EKG once. I worked outside of the country, and we had to do all these physicals before we left, and I had to get an EKG, and they shaved little patches to put the things on. And just having like four patches shaved I thought I was going to die. It was like that Seinfeld episode where it's the wolf man. I couldn't stop scratching. I can't imagine shaving my whole chest. I think that would be the end of me.
I feel your pain, buddy. I feel your pain. Trust me.
Yeah, we don't want to know about Chuck's shaving anyway.
No, no, I don't. It's just that I'm a hairy bastard, so I know what
Greg, your turn.
Moving on.
All right,
we went 19 episodes without stories about Chuck's body hair. Let's not start now.
It's my fault. It's my fault.
That's all right.
My commitment to Gung Ho is pretty legit. I really was going to build like a little M203 grenade launcher.
Sweet.
But again, it just turned out not to be really necessary with how he moved around on stage and stuff.
It may or may not be worth noting that Dave Stecko, absent the actual military record, pretty much is a real-life G.I. Joe. He seeks out danger in strange places around the world. He lived in Africa. He sleeps with swords under his bed and a survival pack near the door. He nice, is pretty much the nice. Real deal.
Now, is he going to have the Cajun accent too, or no?
You know, I definitely go for a non-specific Southern accent.
Okay.
It's my Cajun's not that good, and in addition to that, like having to rap with it.
Yeah.
Sure sounds better and better every minute.
So for the most part, I just go with the basic Southern accent, and I just roll out that way.
Nice.
That's a little taste. That's yeah. a hint.
Very good. I like it. I like it. I
sound like Stone Cold Steve Austin.
That's awesome. People love to hear that.
Yeah, we'll take that.
Full board would be really into that.
So looking at the website for you guys, it looks like, Jim, you did work on the cartoon musical. So what was that about? And here it says, Jay previously wrote and produced the score for the Midwest debut of Cartoon at CIC in Chicago.
Oh. Geez, I'm sorry. I didn't know what you were referring to. Yeah, nope, there was okay.
Look who's prolific.
Yeah.
This guy.
Well, no.
Resume time.
That was a play written by an Austin playwright, and our theater director at the time ran across it, and they put it up in its Midwest debut in Chicago. And because there was a lot of music noted in the script, but there was no music to speak of, she asked me as a company member and as a songwriter to score it. So yeah, we basically turned that play into a musical a couple of years ago. That's true.
I think that the question that must surely be on everyone's mind is, how does Snake Eyes fit into a musical?
It was not easy. I spent a lot of time early on in the outline going, where do I put this guy? He has to be all over it because pay for it, but he doesn't talk.
I don't know how far along you are, but I've got two words that may save you. Interpretive dance.
Well, not to give too much away, but there was a big factor of Snake Eyes being so good and unto himself that he would sort of self-operate a lot. You know, he was originally a commando, which would have put him, you know, in the cover of night behind enemy lines on his own or with a small team. So he actually shares a tight through storyline with Dave's character, Fulbore, in our musical, and he's on a constant battle and dance with the white ninja from the Python side, Silent Stab, and they
Storm frame Shadow.
Silent Stab! I love it!
What's the guy's name?
Sneakies.
Right. So I like this.
Sneakies and Silent Stab, and yes, Dave has to rap those words in tandem in one of his songs.
All of my songs are actually just rap descriptions of how excited I am to see two ninjas fight.
And, that's funny, because that's all of my songs, too.
Yeah, it comes from the heart. It's easy to do.
Yeah, and in the end, we have to give him the payoff. So there is a fairly extensively choreographed ninja-slash-commando fight between Sneakies and Silent Stab that's the culmination of their sort of through line.
My question is, as you may or may not know, in the G.I. Joe fandom, there's always been a debate between the comic book fans and the cartoon fans as to the genetic makeup of Cobra Commander.
Yes.
In your show, I have to ask, is your Python Commander some sort of mutant humanoid?
There's only one right answer here, by the way.
Or is he a washed-up used car salesman? And, you know, and as a part two to this question... Did deciding on his, you know, which version he was factor in? Was it because of what you wanted to write and that's what you decided? Or did what you decide factor into what you were going to write?
Well, I will say this. On the surface of things, from people who are going to see the show, it's going to be a little bit like some of those great movies where at the end you're kind of left to decide. We're not pulling off his hood. It is referenced that he's hideous underneath. So if anyone wants to come in holding their hard conviction, I'm going to allow them to leave the theater doing that. In my own mind, he's not normal. I mean, he's definitely a mutant under there. But I can't say I actually, you know, built a face in my head to work with. I just kind of really wanted the hood to work and for a guy to be able to rap out of it on stage.
I think a really pissed off used car salesman rapping actually goes over a lot better than Mutant Snake from the Middle World.
Just me. I agree with Gary on that one. The Mutant Snake, that's a hard thing to do, and I think it's hard to, as a writer, figure out a motivation for a snake from Middle World. But the used car salesman, the mutated, messed up face guy, he's got lots of reasons to do things.
You hear that, Chuck? Did you hear that, Sunbow? Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, you can eat me, Gary. I'm really confused
about why it can't be both. Why can't he be a mutant snake from a car salesman?
Well, oh, now that's not believable.
It's provocative. That's what art is all about. That's now right. Fight. That's how good this is.
Now you're totally not believable, Craig.
So,
shut up.
Now, for people who don't live in the area and can't go to see the show, how do they kind of get involved in this process? How do they check it out? How do they, you know, how do they see more about it?
Well, if they go to our webpage, which is yojomusical.com, we do have a couple of our PSAs up there. Of course, the cartoon, again, was absolutely known for its PSAs at the end of episodes. And there's been a number of parodies of those out on the internet, but we felt like we had to do it with some of our cast. So you can see those and... Our director David and also our video man is putting together a couple of more of those. We're also on Facebook. You can follow us at Twitter, and I've put a couple of our songs up there, as well as probably what you guys will play on the show here. So there are lots of ways to just sit at home on your computer and view some of the stuff we've done. I get there's potential to, you know, tape the show at some point, but we haven't really put those plans in just yet.
When's Broadway?
Well, some of those angry producers want to come down from the Astro area.
Yeah, if those lawsuits come through, we could be on Broadway in 6 to 8 months.
They can
awesome.
Buy it and they can take the script up there tomorrow.
Well, speaking of music, you did give us a track, what is called You're Overrated, and we'll play a little bit of this for the listeners, but can you kind of set up the scene a little bit about what's going on and what's the song about?
Yeah, well, like Dave said, and we all know if we've watched the show, there's a constant back and forth mistrust and sort of boiling underfight between all the Cobra/Python members. And there's our Python commander, who's the head of the organization, and there's Kilro, known as Destro earlier, who is number two. And of course, even though they attempt to work together to destroy the world, they're constantly facing off and trying to undermine each other. So this is a scene where it actually comes to a head, and they actually agree to fight. And in order to do so, they sort of have an 8 Mile style rap throwdown.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And this is where it comes to a head for those two, and they can no longer pretend that they like each other and want to work together.
From the Yojo, the real American hip hop musical, You're Overrated.
Look who thinks he's the big man now, with his big ideas and his tin can brow. Well, you find that you're not so tough when you're hit with Python Commander stuff. If you think with your big old brain you're as bad as me, then you're just insane. You had best return to your place and pretend you're not just a waste of space. You're no genius, it's IQ inflation. Your sad inventions are masturbation. You can't debate this. You're overrated. Man up and face this. You're overrated. Python Commander, I spit your name. Commanding nothing except for shame. You get the word and then off we go to more embarrassment. My U.S. Joe, and who stands forward and sits out the game? It's you, the one who deserves the blame. You cry incompetence by your crew, but competence as Commander who? I see past your hood, your shady eyelid.
So final question from me. I'm hoping to come down. I'm actually in Milwaukee, so coming down to Chicago for a show shouldn't be a problem. So great. When does it start, and what nights and times are we looking at?
Yeah, our opening night is actually next Friday, September 9th. It's going to run Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m., starting September 9th and closing on October 15th. So it's a six-week run, prime time, Friday and Saturday. It's at CIC, Chemically Imbalanced Comedy Theater here in Chicago. It's 1422 West Irving Park Road. Pretty easy to get to once you get into the city, and most of the people who know comedy here know it, so even if you get lost, you can ask, and they'll point you the way.
I've got one more question. Just how expansive is the cast of characters that you guys are using, and how did you pick and choose who made the cut and who didn't?
We've got a cast of, I think, 14 characters. So for the size of production we're doing in Chicago, that's actually pretty sizable. You'll see a lot of black box theater here that's just a handful of people. It was tough because I basically started with, well, what do I remember, without going back and researching what most bubbles up in my mind from G.I. Joe. And I wrote those characters down. And then I went back through and tried to see, well, what characters are funny, what work, what would make good storylines, what have good design, who could I cast as these people realistically. And then from there, it would just kind of shave and trim. Yeah, and so it was a winnowing process after that. But basically, it was just like, I know there's, you know, 6, 7, 8 characters that I remember, would not forget, and have to be in this. And I'll start with them and I'll work from there.
He didn't actually want to write in Zartan, but we actually know a guy who turns blue in direct sunlight. We have
a no-brainer.
All right, we'll put you in.
Damn it, Justin, you took my question. Okay, let's of all of the casts of Joe and Cobra, which is the most obscure that you have as a member of your show?
Dave, who would you say is the most obscure? They're pretty canon.
Yeah, they are. Boy, you know,
you can go for a crystal ball or a raptor or anything like that.
you know, I guess, I mean, yeah, they're all pretty canon. I would say maybe the most obscure would be we got Tomax and Zaymot, which is all Gore-Tex and Zetrog.
Do they rap to each other's thoughts?
Yes, so they finish each other's thoughts in the rap. Yes,
awesome.
This has got to get out on DVD.
Oh, man, yeah, we got to hear the rest of these.
And we've also spent a lot of time choreographing it so that when one gets hit, the other feels it. It's not as easy as it sounds.
Gore-Tex and Zetrog, nice.
That's right. I fully expect the pharmaceutical and plastics people to come after me for borrowing their names for...
Yeah, but you're totally safe from Hasbro, dude. So
Hasbro's going to leave me alone. It's the manufacturers who are coming after me.
Actually, I thought of a question if I could jump back. Do you have Scarlet or Lady J?
In fact, they are both in the show. Yes, they are J-Gal and Red.
And is Red with Sneaky, or Red? Is she with whatever Duke's called?
Yeah, she is with Duck.
As easy as getting rid of a vowel.
Duck.
Yeah, that was the romance that I remembered as a kid. So I was like, that's what I got to go with.
I'm frantically trying to think of what Flint would be without you telling me.
All right, I'll let Flint, you guess.
So there's a Flint analog?
In fact, there is, and yeah.
Is his name Steel? I'm thinking Flint and Steel, or Flint and, like, fire, something to do with starting fires, no?
You're working too hard.
Oh, okay. Is his name Clint?
Flinch.
Flinch.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Nice, okay.
And it's weird, they work in tandem, Duck and Flinch. Mad Magazine would have written that themselves if they had the chance.
Now that makes a whole lot of sense right now. That's awesome.
Having been such a big fan of G.I. Joe growing up, it was actually really hard to do the scenes and not call people by their G.I. Joe names. That was actually one of the hardest things for me as far as learning lines, is to not call them Duke and Flint.
Yeah, and same for the production crew. We kind of had to weed it out of everybody over the course of a few weeks.
Well, overall, it sounds like it's going to be a hell of a good time, we'll have Greg go down there and sit in on it and tell us how it all is. But overall, it sounds awesome, and appreciate all your work and everything. Hopefully, it does extremely well, and we definitely appreciate you coming on the program to promote it.
Well, thanks for getting in touch with us. We appreciate the chance to talk about it, and it's great to run across a heady bunch of Joe fans like this.
Absolutely. I'm glad you're out there doing the work. I'd also like to add that the Slugger was the greatest vehicle ever created.
I can get behind that.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah.
Stormy.
Storm Eagle, is that what you just said?
Yeah, is that what it was called? The jet with the had the little squirty gun at the front?
Good grief.
Jeez.
As a kid, that was my favorite toy. I loved that.
It must be Australian.
Shut up, man. We didn't
An American like, wouldn't have liked that plane.
You have to remember, take all of the G.I. Joe toys that came out, now halve them, now take out the good ones, and that's what we got. So, the Storm Eagle was fantastic, right?
When you say it like that, it's probably about the best of it.
G.I. Joe is a somewhat daring, middly funded peacekeeping force.
With squirt guns.
from a country that's way too far away for you to ever visit.
Well, thanks again for joining us, guys. Thanks. It sounds like you had as much fun making the musical as hopefully it'll end up being.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been a blast. Thank you, guys, and we hope people come out and see it. We think it's going to be great.
All right, time for the mailbag.
You've
our
got mail.
Special mailbag
it's
edition
not
of
spam.
The What's on Joe Mind podcast.
Yeah, surprise, folks. so much for that email-only program. Our apologies. The reason why, just to give you a quick explanation, is that next week when their record night or our record night is their preview night for their friends and family. So that's why we brought them a week early. Plus, they wanted to do it before their show debuted. So thanks for them being flexible, and apologies to everyone expecting just email for this episode.
Yeah, I think it was worth it.
For sure.
Hilarious.
So we had more questions than I think we can actually get to tonight. So I'm taking the oldest ones first, and we'll get to some of the newer ones later on in a couple weeks, hopefully. First one is from John, a.k.a. Fastdraw, on his tank. He says, someone may have mentioned it since, but they did have a My Little Pony convention this year in Pawtucket at the headquarters on July 9th, he believes. And then he gives a link. It's mylittleponycon.com. So I know Craig was planning on making it this year, but couldn't. So Craig, one for you next year.
That one came. That was stealth. I like that one, Greg.
I remember hearing about this, and if you guys want to have a laugh, if I heard the numbers correctly.
Oh, sorry.
If I heard the numbers correctly, this drew more people than JoeCon and was just a couple hundred people off from what BotCon drew.
Actually, I'm not laughing because I believe it.
Yeah, I believe it too.
I just, you know, I mean, freaking ponies, but hey.
See, I tell you, of all the pushcasts we've done, we did a segment at the end of one episode about My Little Pony, and it's something like 100 or so listens higher than every other episode we've ever done.
Yeah, well, it's weird, too, because I did an article on Mark Belomo once, probably a couple months ago, and just in
you
the
You did
midst,
an article on him?
Yeah, about him or about his...
Well, I'm about to say, where'd you sign him?
About his, I think it was his totally tubular 80s book. And I made some references to My Little Pony. I don't even remember what references I made in the article or in the interview. Something about whether or not he was going to do a book about it, mostly as a joke. And somehow the link tracked back to a My Little Pony site, and it got like circulated around there. My traffic spiked like 200% just by people coming to see what I was saying about My Little Pony, when it was like one little line, little joke within the whole context of the interview. It was kind of crazy.
Have any of you actually seen it, just out of interest, or do you just not, by default, you're just like, nah, this is stupid?
The new cartoon is supposedly really funny and has garnered a lot of interest among even male fans, but no, I'm not the least bit interested. I haven't checked it out myself.
I saw, like, the original series 30 years ago, and to be honest, I've tried to remember it, but I keep getting it confused with, like, Care Bears.
No, the new one is actually, it is. It's really quite funny. Like, I'm by no means a brony or one of the hardcore fans of it. I'm just like, so my friend started watching it and he said, give it a look, it's really funny. And it is. Like, I watched, I don't know, I think I've seen most of them now. But it's something I watch whenever I've got 20 minutes free, like when I'm waiting for something else. And I'm just like, all right, I'll throw an episode on. And it's cute. It's by the guy who did, you know, it's by the team who did like Powerpuff Girls and Samurai Jack and stuff. So, you know, it's got a good pedigree behind it. It's worth the, you know, the 20 minutes it takes to watch an episode. It's not bad.
Yeah, I don't have anything against it. I just haven't gone out of my way to check it out yet.
Yeah, it's definitely not particularly in my wheelhouse, but I do know a very good friend of mine, also a friend of the show, Jason, otherwise known as South Zen on the board. He and his wife, his wife is huge into My Little Ponies, and it's shouldn't be to any surprise. I mean, they have their own con, they have San Diego Comic Con exclusives, they have store exclusives. I mean, all over the world. I know they sell them. When I was in Germany, I went to a Toys R Us there, and they had My Little Ponies there. But she was telling me kind of the length and scope of kind of the pony hobby, and I'm like, geez, it's not surprising when Chuck said that there was more people at PonyCon versus JoeCon, because what she was telling me, everything, I believe it. But if you've seen in the past on one of the JoeCon, I forget what year it was a Dallas show possibly, she did the Pimp Daddy Pony and the Zartan Pony, and they were awesome. There's a little Joe Pony crossover courtesy of my my pals down in Louisiana.
If you ever look up, just Google sometime, like, custom My Little Ponies, the people do some spectacular work on them. Like, they're a phenomenal custom of pony stuff.
And they're highly collectible. I mean, just the mass release, My Little Ponies, I mean, when they put out variants, I mean, they go for, like, big bucks. I mean, it's like a serious money business. It's just insane.
Yeah, easy.
All right. Thanks for writing in, John. Next letter is from Torpedo, a.k.a. Hawaii Mike.
All right.
Aloha is all. I read and enjoyed Justin's review on the new Sky Striker on his site. Just a thought, those extra details in the black and yellow color set are likely a nod to the real F-14 squadrons, VF-84 and VF-103, both known as the Jolly Rogers. And yes, it was VF-84 that starred in the final countdown, as I'm sure Gary will only be happy to point out.
Thank you, as we play the music in the background. Yes, the Jolly Rogers.
Or there could be a nod to the Macross / Robotech VF-1S Skull 1.
Oh, hell no. It's Jolly Rogers.
and look, I'm a big Macross fan, but the VF-1S colors are a reference to the Jolly Rogers themselves. So it could be that, but it's... That is in itself a reference to the Jolly Rogers. So
there you
Sorry.
Go. Thanks for writing in, Mike. Next one is from Tom, the old dude Brooks. It's a little bit longer story. He says, "Greetings, WOJM guys. In my only email to you, I mentioned that I had a cool Max Brooks story. Now it can be told. I had posted on Facebook in May 2011 about the book Tales from the Cobra Wars. Great book. I read most of it during jury duty. The last story, Exorcist, I read about a week later. Incredible story. It had such an impact on me that I made a quick blog entry about it, and we'll post that blog entry into the show notes. I also found the author's page, Max Brooks, on Facebook and left a comment and a link to my blog. Okay, cool. No big deal, right? On June 2nd, I happened to check my school/work email. I was out for the summer, but starting summer math camp on the next Monday, and I got an email from somebody wondering if I'm the Thomas Brooks who runs the Reasonably Intelligent Rambling blog, because the other Mr. Brooks was pleased with what he had written about his writing. I'm guessing it may have been his agent. I confirmed my ID, and after a few emails back and forth that morning, I find out that Max Brooks was very grateful for the kind words about his story and would like to send me an autographed copy of the G.I. Joe anthology
nice.
To me if I'm interested. Seriously? Interested? Hell yeah. So Max Brooks is going to send an autographed copy of Tales from the Cobra Wars to me sometime in the future. He may also be speaking at Oglethorpe University in Atlanta in October, and I've been invited to attend. This is so friggin' cool. I got some great mail today. A copy of Tales from the Cobra Wars, autographed by Max Brooks. Pretty dang cool. And he says we rock, and et cetera, et cetera. So that's pretty awesome. I know I've plugged it before, but the Tales from the Cobra Wars is very cool. If you guys get a chance, pick it up. And Max Brooks, I had a chance to listen to one of his talks. He was on campus here a couple of years ago talking about World War Z and the Zombie Survival Guide. But he is A, hilarious, but also really smart and really cool. So thanks for writing in, Tom. That's awesome.
I was definitely impressed, and IDW tapped him to write some G.I. Joe stuff. That's very cool. It's a great story.
Yeah, lucky guy.
All right. Next one is from Jesse from Texas. Jesse says, "Hey, guys, been listening to the podcast since it started. It's great. Blah, 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 more nice things said about us." He goes, oh,
blah, blah, blah. You limit his letter by blah, blah, blah?
Well, it's the compliment. Okay. Is it big enough egos away to...
Hey. Just.
I don't. No one mails my show. I come here for my, you know, positive affirmation.
He goes, "I was just curious to know what each of your favorite non-mainstream characters are." Ooh. When I say non-mainstream, I mean characters who got little to no love in the comics or cartoons. The guy, like most, was named Backblast. He had these ripped arms and had a definite Fu Manchu mustache. To me, he was like my personal Hulk Hogan.
I even had brother.
They were like a team. His friends were Outback Hardball and hitting around. For the longest time, I wasn't able to get any of the older figures, so I didn't get a Duke or a Cobra Commander, so I had to make do. So I think it would be interesting to hear which figures everyone is drawn to, even though they didn't get much love from Hasbro. That is an awesome question.
Ever, first of all.
Well, I bet you Justin has some. Anything that's neon.
I'm a big fan of Recoil, because he came out in the later series, and his accessories, even though they had terrible colors, were awesome, because he had probably one of the best M16s that came out in the original line, and he just had a cool look to him. I was a big fan of his.
Fast draw, no question. First JoJo I ever got, which was in the first series, or one of the first series that ever came out here. We didn't get Duke or anything. I think I've talked about all that before. But yeah, fast draw. I thought he was really cool. I liked his flip-down helmet and the big missile backpack and stuff. I think the only thing that I gave him additionally was, as soon as I got one, he got a second, like a machine gun, so that when he fired his missiles, he wasn't defenseless.
Jeez. I'm trying to think, because right off the top of my head, I want to say Low Light, but, you know, in that second season, he was a somewhat featured player. I would have to say Budo, because, you know, he was like the samurai G.I. Joe. I remember he really just stuck out more so than, say, Snake Eyes or Storm Shadow, because, you know, there he was on the battlefield in full samurai regalia. You know, no guns, just a whole bunch of swords.
One of the swords was still in its sheath.
Yeah.
I'm around whacking with it.
I forgot about
that. I thought he was cool. I mean, I loved it. I mean, I loved the fact that, I think for me what attracted me to him was the fact that you could store his weapons on him, which, yeah, you know.
That was kind of ahead of its time right there, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it was like a big thing for me. I think that's it, because all the other guys I'm thinking of were like known characters, you know. It was just versions of them that necessarily didn't factor into, you know, the comics or cartoon.
Mine are a little bit earlier on. I know he got run during the Mass Device, and then he was also, I think he appeared in Operation Night Attack, was his first issue, issue 16, but Torpedo didn't get a lot of run. And the fact that he was a Navy SEAL, even back at 9, 8 years old, I kind of really knew how badass SEALs were. My mother was a school teacher, and she would have every year, you know, all sorts of families would go through her classroom, and actually one of the fathers of one of her kids was a SEAL, and he was on the PTO. He knew that I liked G.I. Joe, and we were talking at one of the PTO meetings, and he was telling me about war is not necessarily a good thing, which probably from his point of view, if he indeed really was a SEAL, is probably, you know, well experienced, unfortunately. So from that point on, I'm like, wow, man, these SEALs are badasses, but they're getting no runtime because everyone likes ninjas. So that's, I always like Torpedo. Also, the fact that my dad was a scuba diver as well, so all that equipment and everything, I could actually kind of see my dad as that as well, as a child. And then the other character, mainly because he's from Indiana, was Footloose, which he does have a bit of a fan following, because I know the fandom is kind of clamoring the club to bring him out in one form or another. He did come out in the movie line, I believe. The funniest thing I think about Footloose is he's the only white guy from Gary, Indiana.
Is that right?
His file card says Gary, Indiana.
I actually think Chuck touched upon something. I really liked characters that had some sort of holster or some way to store their guns when they weren't sort of carrying them. I always thought that was really cool. I still do. It's one of my favorite features, having holsters and things. I always like that in a toy.
Yeah, I think mine, it's funny, the letter writer actually mentioned probably my favorite obscure character. Like Gary said, I like a lot of them, but Hit and Run probably leads the pack. Just a great kind of later year figure that never got much love in the comic or the cartoon. You know, the figure itself is great, just fully camouflaged from head to toe. He's got some cool gear. He's got that great kind of duffel bag grappling hook thing with a knife sheath on the side. But yeah, I really loved his file card, really. Just Larry Hammond was able to really get a lot of character into very little space. And, you know, his parents killed by a drunk driver and him being kind of in custody of the state for his whole childhood and just training himself by running away from his all the different orphanages he was assigned to. And just kind of a really cool look into his background and really cool figure to boot. So he's definitely one of my favorites.
I think that's the good thing with G.I. Joe is, I mean, a lot of characters that we say they get overexposed. People get sick of Snake Eyes, or people get sick of Duke, or, you know, the usual. But there's so many characters from the later on years, or even ones that really didn't get much of a highlight, like Torpedo. There's a lot of characters and figures that need. That's why like Mike's Forgotten Figures was such a good site, because it put a spotlight on places that are figures or vehicles that really didn't get a whole lot of love. So, very good question.
Like the Storm Eagle.
The what?
No, not really like the Storm Eagle.
The what?
Sorry.
No, wait a minute, because I looked on YoJo. Did they do a remold of the Storm Eagle that actually, instead of a water unit, they put in a projection unit that you could, like, on walls project, like, Cobra vehicles that you could, like, shoot at and stuff like that?
Because it had a different one.
Have you been smoking your dinner again, Chuck?
No, there was a plane that did that, but it wasn't, was it the Ghost Striker?
Well, there is a Ghost Striker, but I don't remember any kind of projection device that was involved, unless I'm totally spacing out.
I thought the Ghost Striker had something with its, it had something projected from the engine block underneath the cockpit. Hang on, you guys keep talking, I'll look it up.
Because I know there was something like that, but you know, touching off of something that Greg said, the new mold era figures from the early 2000s, I mean, a lot of those figures had great stories told on the back of their file cards. You know, you had Bombstrike, Blackout, and their sister, that little, you know, sniper duel thing. And then, of course, you know, there was Surefire, who I just recently discovered. And, you know, that's a figure I'd love to see now. But, I mean, the story, I mean, you know, you think about it, a military police officer, that's something G.I. Joe needs. I mean, what happens when you take in all those Cobra troopers off the field? They got to be processed somehow.
That's what you have Law and Order for.
No.
Law and Order is MP.
Yeah. That's a different thing. What
you just said Surefire was a military police.
Yeah, I'm about to say, did I miss something? I got to go back and rewind.
Well, I'm sorry, I should have said he was military criminal investigative. He was basically the Army version of a JAG officer, if that makes sense to anybody. And he was a sniper who, you know, how can you go wrong?
He was a sniper and he was a martial artist? Dude was a man.
Yeah, something like that.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, your number two fan for Surefire.
Hey, I love Surefire is cool. There's nothing wrong with Surefire.
Sure.
Yeah,
I've got it up on YoJo. I stand corrected.
Yeah, the Ghost Striker was the one that could do the projection thing. And looking at the Storm Eagle, it doesn't mention any remolds. So as far as I know, there's only the original.
Yeah, I'm sure Chuck was thinking of the Ghost Striker, though.
Yeah, I was thinking of the Ghost Striker. I just figured they, you know, if they had the shell, just, you know, reuse it. But
I've been umming and ahhing buying the Ghost Striker, actually. It's a cool complaint.
Well, see, I really can't buy the vintage vehicles because I would want to use the newer anniversary figures. And, you know, it's a crapshoot on whether or not the newer figure would fit in the older vehicle.
Yeah, especially because these vehicles were notoriously small.
Yeah, it sort of depends. Like, the Storm Eagle, for example, was basically just a lie-down cockpit, so that one would probably be okay. You're right about the Ghost Striker, though. I'm not sure if anyone would fit in it. The other one I really want, what's the tank? Not the little tank, the bigger one.
The little tank, the bigger one. Wouldn't it matter?
not the little tank. There's a larger tank.
Mahler?
Was it part of like Battle Force 2000?
No. It was like a tank. It was like a proper tank. And I thought it had treads from memory.
It could be the Mahler. Mauler.
That's it. Yep. The Mauler. That's the one I was thinking of. I really want the Mauler, but it's really hard to find on eBay, even close to intact.
Yeah, the Mauler's kind of a sore subject.
Yeah. Okay.
No, the Collectors Club supposedly had a line on doing a pair of Mauler
tanks for the memories.
Partial retools to go along with the 2007 Joe Convention set. There was one in Cobra colors called the Cobra Shredder, and one in green, which was it called the Mauler? I don't even remember.
I think they went with the Mauler.
Yeah, but they looked really awesome. Had some very cool drivers, and there was tooling issues. And they couldn't make it happen, and they never came out.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, but the drivers did, and you could go back and read on forums the fiasco.
let's not dip into that. That's a can of worms we don't need to open.
We're looking positive toward the future now. Positive.
Well, plus we're already like an hour into the show, and that could spiral into a whole nother conversation.
I'm actually surprised that Greg hasn't been like yelling at us. I'm really surprised he's maintained his decorum.
Well, Greg, I think it's ready to move on to the next one, isn't it, Greg?
I am supposed to like make him cry, so I mean he's trying to hold me back.
Anyways, so we have a next letter from Vince. Vince says, "Is there any news on the A?" ARAH old school membership figures. He's been looking forward to them, but with the G.I. Joe Club subscription figures coming and SK Omega sometime in the future, he feels like he's going to be overwhelmed with products that he really, 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 really wants. So he says, I know I just can't justify spending so much money. Do any of you guys feel the same way? And if so, if you were forced to pick only one of these lines to collect, which one would it be? Ooh. That is a good one.
That is a good question. Go.
For myself, I'd say the club subscription figures, and that's only because I'm not a big old school figure fan anymore. I mean, they're fine. O-ring figures are fine, but I think the subscription figures will fit in better with my current collection.
That's my attitude.
We all know how Chuck feels about the O-ring. So.
Well, no, don't start that again.
Remember, SK Omega O-rings are infused with vibranium.
It's like Heckle and Jekyll here. But the only thing I can tell you is look at what each one is offering and what you like more and just go from there. I mean, they are going to be expensive lines. If you're a real dyed-in-the-wool G.I. Joe fan, then I think the ARAH old school membership figures might be more along the lines of something you would want. But if you're looking for something a little newer with a different story, then you can go with SK Omega. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, what you can afford, what you really like, and, you know, go from there.
So wishy-washy.
Chuck, you did not answer the question, dude.
Man up and take a stand.
Come on.
We all know what the answer is going to be anyway.
What?
All the club subscription. If you had to buy one of them, you would get the club subscription.
Well, if he's already a club member, yeah. But I mean, because I think my thing was going to be, what's the cheaper option? And off the top of my head, I was going to say SK Omega is the cheaper option.
All right.
But if he has a little wiggle room, then he can look a little bit broader than just price.
Yeah, it's going to be a really tough question for me to answer. I'm really tough because all three lines are stuff that I think I'm really going to be interested in. The only downside that SK Omega has is that we haven't seen any physical product really, so it's kind of tough for me to weigh it equally with the others. If I could only get one, I don't know. I don't know. It would be a tough call because the RAH is already making a Pythona that I really, really, really want. But, I'm really interested to see what the club subscription figures are, too. And I've got so many new style G.I. Joe figures that they would fit right into. If I could only get one out of the three, I guess it would probably be the club membership figures. Just because in my heart of hearts, I am a G.I. Joe completist. And technically, the RAH stuff is not official G.I. Joe merchandise. And technically, SK Omega is not officially G.I. Joe merchandise. So I'd have to stick with the brand. I guess, but it would be a tough choice, really tough choice.
Yeah, I'm with the group. I'm with the subscription. However, I have put my money where my mouth is, and I have paid my $120+ now to the ARAH project.
Oh yeah.
So for the three figures for sure are Pythona, and then you could either pick from either the Iron Grenadier Sniper or the Cobra Sniper. The second quarterly figure hasn't been decided upon yet. I'm not quite sure where the voting stands on that, but they just got done with SlayerCon, so I would imagine probably in the next week or so they'll start picking back up business over there. Imagine SlayerCon during a hurricane probably had a lot of attention focused elsewhere other than what was going on with project voting. But if you have money and you're burning a hole in your pocket and you want to spend it now, there you go. They're ready. They're accepting. It'll take it. But if, like Justin said, you're completist and you want everything official, go with the club subscription. And I'm actually going to go with that too. But if I had to lay it down the one, it would be the club subscription.
Can I just say how awesome it is right now that we have these choices to make?
That's a good point.
4 years ago, you basically had what Hasbro was putting out for 25th stuff and then getting ready for the movie.
What a matter. You had all the Lennard stuff, dude.
A lot of current Joe fans kind of take it for granted. But when my wife first started going down to law school in Western Massachusetts, 1998, 1999, I was walking the aisles in Target looking at the Lennard stuff, looking at the knockoff stuff, because I wanted some 3¾-inch military figures. I wanted some of that stuff, and G.I. Joe just wasn't sold. So you kind of had to take what you could get. But people now are taking for granted the fact that there's so much product out there and available that you can get, and not even G.I. Joe. I mean, G.I. Joe, Marvel, DC.
Marvel, yeah, exactly.
I mean, jeez, there's so much great geek toy stuff out these days. Thundercats, which Gary doesn't want me to talk about. Man, just to kind of take it for granted, all the people who complain about distribution and stuff, well, at least there's stuff to be distributed. Wasn't like that 10 years ago, so.
Let's also keep in mind that, you know, the subscription, the ARAH figures, SK Omega, that's all stuff that's mail order. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. for the average consumer, they're limited to what you can go and find in a store. What that is just the mainline Hasbro product, which, you know, still is having a hard time finding space on a shelf.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, hopefully that's changing now as we hear, like, Walmart's all across the country are starting to stock this stuff. Hopefully that's kind of turning a corner a little bit. We'll see.
Yeah, oh, yeah, so definitely, I hope so.
All right, so we have another letter. This one is from Travis. Travis says, with G.I. Joe 2 moving forward and with the community's hopes of G.I. Joe 3 and more cartoon series, do you think G.I. Joe will, in the next 5 to 10 years of Joe Evolution, we think it will introduce new characters similar to Sunbow's 86 season that introduced Serpenner, Mindbender, etc., that went on to become classic characters? Or do you think G.I. Joe will forever be the real American hero cast like Duke, Snake Eyes, etc.? That's also a very good question. I would say at this point, the core cast of characters is going to be set. I think, and that's how it is for any sort of team in culture or like pop culture, basically. So like if you look at the X-Men, you think of a specific team that, and it's going to have the mainstays, you know, for Joe it's going to be Snake Eyes and Duke and Scarlet and Roadblock in some form and Tunnel Rat, etc. And, you know, X-Men it's Wolverine and Cyclops and Professor X. I mean, that's, there's always going to be people that you associate with a team. There's going to be certain characters that may be introduced for specific media just because there's got to be the new character that is like new to the world and introduces you to everybody else, essentially. But I think the cast is essentially set for unless something else changes later on down the line.
I think we can assume that the cast is going to be pretty much the same as it ever has been. I mean, it's been that way for going on almost 30 years now, so I don't see it changing in the next 5 or 10 years. I mean, if you could say, you know, if the movie takes off and is a huge hit, then yeah, the Roadblock might become a more focal character, but he already is a pretty focal character. So Snake Eyes is already a main character in the film, so is Duke, so I don't see anything changing unless, you know, Robin, Brock, and Sam become the new core G.I. Joe team.
Can't wait.
I was going to say that I think that's pretty standard across the board too. Like, fans don't want, especially collectors, it's really hard to judge as collectors what's going to do well and what's not, because we want, well, I don't necessarily, but let's say for the most part, collectors want the stuff that they had as kids. They just want them better. If they did another ninja character, let's say, they brought out a character called, I don't know, Nunchuck. I know there was a joke called Nunchuck, but just for example, they brought out
Silent Stab.
Silent Stab, exactly.
Love it.
then Joe fans are going to, and especially if he's just a sort of a basic, let's say a Storm Shadow kind of character, they're going to be like, well, why didn't you just do Storm Shadow? Why did you do a new character? And I don't think that's limited to G.I. Joe fans. That's Transformers fans don't want new Transformers. Marvel fans don't want new X-Men. Everyone wants the stuff that they had before. They just want it better and new.
And that's where it gets to this. You can't win, because, you know, they'll do stuff like that and they'll say, well, why don't you use the existing character? Well, then they'll use the existing character and they'll change him too much. And then the fans are like, well, why don't you just do a new character if you're going to change him so much? It's that
exactly.
thin line they've got to walk.
I actually touched upon this in an answer to another question, but let's not forget that there's like a whole bunch of new characters that were created during the new mold era. New Sculpt era that really some of them were just starting to be fleshed out. I was interested in, but then that was done. They went into the 25th anniversary and we went back to like the original core characters, and I'd like to see some of those characters revisited and, you know, maybe broad, you know, instead of creating new characters, go back to the newer characters you already have and, you know, flesh them out, you know, and things of that nature, you know, touching off something Craig said, going, you know, Transformers and, you know, the other brands. I mean, it's the same thing. It's not that they don't want new characters. It's just that there's characters that been around that have just really have been forgotten, or you know, were you know, one and done that they'd like to see revisited.
Yeah, I do agree with that, but I was more saying that it's. I mean, I think if someone had a choice between, let's say, Fast Draw and, I don't know, what's one of the new characters? Bombstrike. Was Bombstrike one of the new characters?
Yep.
Yeah. The new sculpt era, yeah.
Right. Okay, well, that's a bad example because it's a female, so that changes the dynamic a bit. But what was the... What
Crosshair.
Was the name of the guy?
Crosshair. That's, right. That's Greg's alter ego.
Yeah, make Greg happy.
Yeah.
Like, Fast Draw, who was a character who was essentially just a figure, like he never really had more than that, versus a character who appeared in the comics, but people would probably still want Fast Draw more because he's an original, and people are like, well, we need to complete the original line, like, give us the originals, we haven't finished them yet. I remember when I just signed on to, when I got back into the line, there was a thread on, I think it was on Histank, which said, hey, we've only got 120 characters to go before we've got a complete run of, and I'm like, what are you, crazy? Like, who wants some of those characters, really?
And who the hell's counting? Jeez.
Gensu, we need Gensu.
It blows my mind the way that fandom, and it's not just G.I. Joe fandom, like, but it blows my mind the way that fandom works.
Well, you use the term original, and, you know, just from what I've seen in G.I. Joe's, there's several definitions of original. There's the original 13, and, you know, that was a big thing with the 25th anniversary, that there had to be 25th anniversary updates of the original 13. Then it was like, then you go by year, the 84 figures, the 85 figures. Some people don't, you know, consider the figures that came out in 86 because of the movie to be new Joes, you know, because some of them were going to replace Joes that were going to be phased out after the movie. And then you get into the 90s and it was a whole new thing there. So, you know, I mean, I don't really consider Joes from like the 1990s to be originals. I mean, they were made after the line was established, and if they get remade or not is not something that I'm gonna lose sleep over.
And I agree with you, but not everyone will. Like, there's a lot of people who are like, we need. Well, I mean, what the original G.I. Joe line is considered to have gone from what, 82 to what, 94. And there are people who are like, that is the original Joe line, and we need everyone from that line again, but better, which I don't agree with. But, you know, like, it's hard to, in some ways you're right, Chuck, like, you know, it's semantics. What does the original line mean? It means something different to everybody.
To go back to the question, will we see? Yeah, I guess the possibility does exist. We will see, as everyone else said. And actually, I got a first-hand earful on it. I was at a convention, I believe it was New Orleans, and actually I believe I was talking again with Neil Hoffman, and I basically said, hey, cut back on the Snake Eyes, Duke, Storm Shadows, Cobra Commanders, Destros, etc., etc., etc. Same question that everyone else asked. I got a chance to ask it in front of him, and he says that they're always going to be there. It's for the new fan. It's for the new person. It's for their hopping on point. We don't necessarily, as collectors, have to get them again, but collectors tend to be completists, so we're going to get them anyway. That's why you're going to constantly see these guys in here, because it's really meant for the new fan, that when they hop on, they can get themselves a Duke. I believe one of the letters that we got earlier said someone that came in too late into the line and they never got a chance to get a Cobra Commander or a Duke. Well, you're not going to have that problem now. And the other part of that question is, let's look at the club subscription, and the club for that matter. I can't think the club has ever brought out a Duke or a Snake Eyes. I think probably the most common figure that they've come out with, that, and when you say common, I'm saying there's a lot of versions of them. When you look in the Yojo database, would be Cobra Commander. They done two. They did a free figure, and then they Operation Anaconda. Destro, they did one of. Don't confuse JoeCon stuff with San Diego Comic-Con, because that's separate, so depending. Daddies don't really count in the Joe Club scheme of things, but the Joe Club tends to pride itself on not going the easy route on a character. They'll dig a little bit deeper and try to bring another character in. A Flint recently from Vacation in the Shadows was actually another one of the more common figures that they kind of brought back, but the club does not revisit the common ones very often. So if you don't find it in the main line, you might find it from the club instead.
And then Travis has a follow-up question. He says, if cartoons are there to sell toys, why is Hasbro launching a Renegades toy line weeks after the show was canceled? I love the Renegades show, and the toy line looks great, but I'm a bit confused as to why they would pull the plug on a season on a new network and then launch a toy line.
What a really excellent question, Justin. Yes. Do you have any comments on this?
Yeah, I would say you can file that under Snafu. They obviously they had bigger plans for G.I. Joe Renegades than what actually happened, or you would hope they did. And I think also a part of what goes into it is initially they were planning on making these Renegades figures more animated in design, you know, different articulation, a whole different kind of figure style. And when the backlash kind of emerged over a drastic change, potential change in the style of the figures, they had to kind of go back to the drawing board very quickly and trace their steps back a little bit, which might have delayed things a little bit further. You know, honestly, I wish I had a good answer for you. Everybody will say how much of a Hasbro apologist I am. I've got no apology for this one. This one just boggles my mind.
Well, I'm actually kind of impressed. You could have just, you manned up and answered it. You could have just actually said no comment.
No, I'm not. Well, I mean, I do have a comment. I mean, I'm a big Renegades fan, and I think that Hasbro really shortchanged the Renegades brand and really took something that had a lot of promise. I mean, how often do we get a very good quality G.I. Joe animated series? Once, you know, not very often.
That's true. That's true.
So you got to take advantage of stuff like that. Who knows when that's going to come around again? Who knows when they're going to find that right combination of talent and design and new network to put the program on? Yeah, they say that they're going to return to animation after the movie, and maybe they will. Maybe they'll continue Renegades, and I'll be a happy camper. But it just seems to me you don't waste those opportunities. You don't, you know, take a 26 episode order of an awesome animated series, cancel it after a season, and release the figures 3 months after the last episode aired. It's totally nonsensical. Not to mention the fact that it's just the first wave that's being released now, and these figures are going to spiral into the spring of 2012, and by that point it'll be, you know, 6 or 8 months since an episode of Renegades aired on TV. It just makes no sense. I mean, unless somehow Renegades is more directly tied to the film, and they, you know, they kind of, you know, share some of the elements, then maybe that makes a little bit of sense. But, you know, I don't know. I still see it would kind of reinvent the wheel a little bit, and it's really kind of disappointing. I mean, you got to figure, you know, the excuse they used about wanting to abandon Renegades to focus more on the movie continuity and kind of rebuild the brand a little bit, you know, it just doesn't wash, because they had to have known the movie production was moving along. Why even introduce a cartoon that you were just going to end after the first season? Yeah, as far as everything I've heard, it was getting good ratings. I really can make no sense of it, and I wish I could pull out some obscure marketing wisdom that would explain it away, besides the fact that they just couldn't get their crap together. But unfortunately, in this opportunity, I think that's exactly what kind of happened. They just couldn't get their crap together.
I think also the issue was that where could they get the Renegades figures to fit in? You know, I don't think if you tried to, like, peg them on and turn 4 or 5 figure waves from Pursuit of Cobra into 6 or 7 figure waves, that might be an issue just for the stores to order. I mean, we had a hard enough time with the stores getting Pursuit of Cobra figures on shelves. The other thing is, and I kind of say this hoping that the figures, instead of being used to promote, you know, having to promote a cartoon or having a cartoon to promote them, will be used to promote the eventual DVD release of Renegades.
You would think, but you know, we haven't heard a word one about a DVD release. Maybe Hasbro, in line with the movie, but
yeah.
Hasbro and DVD releases aren't that great. Mm-hmm. They just announced the My Little... to go back to the My Little Pony thing for just a second...
Yes, let's go back to My Little Pony, Craig.
Actually,
next it's, hour on My Little Pony.
It's hour two.
We haven't talked
Pony
nearly
discussion.
Enough My yes. Little Pony these days.
Hey, we might get more hits on this episode.
I was going to help you make your point, but you know no. what? Shove it up. I was going to support your point and go with you, but now, you know what? No more Renegades. But no, like,
I'm sorry, Craig, please continue.
When you were talking about, like, the question was, how did they miss the boat on Renegades figures? They missed the boat on My Little Pony figures as well. The My Little Pony stuff
Prime
that was.
Too.
And Transformers Prime as well. Well, that's, you know, they're all good examples. Like, all of those had cartoons that have finished airing a season. My Little Pony had some stuff that came out while the season was still airing in the US, but it was basically slapped together versions of old characters, and they didn't sell. As soon as the new stuff started coming out, the My Little Pony sales started to go back up again, because all of the adult collectors were buying them because they knew it would give them more of the show, and a lot of the kids were buying them because they look like the cartoons now. Transformers Prime, I'm stunned that they missed the boat on Transformers Prime, and I think it was just bad timing with the movie. And again, you gotta wonder, though, how does Hasbro not know when things are coming out? You know, it's almost like they should have delayed the Hub Network for 6 months or 8 months and started it up after their big movie was hitting. Their big Transformers movie was hitting.
Well, the one thing is, you know, when the Hub was launched and these shows were released, I mean, Hasbro was very clear in saying that there would be no tie-in product with the initial launch of the series, and that it was to see how this individual series go, whether or not they would do tie-in product. The other thing you have to remember is the hub is not Hasbro's network exclusively. I mean, there are decisions made by other people who have no connection to Hasbro whatsoever that affect, you know, the Hasbro properties that Hasbro may not be okay with. You know, yes, it was Hasbro's decision to end Renegades because of the movie, but, you know, how it ended, when it ended, that may have been out of their hand, you know, with their other properties as well. You know, Prime and My Little Pony Friendship is Magic. You know, that could have been, you know, the Discovery side of things. Because, you know, that's who they're partnered with for the hub.
When's the Joe movie supposed to come out? Is there a...
End of June.
Yeah, June 29th, 2012.
And Renegades ended, what, June of... Roughly in June of this year?
Mm-hmm.
So that's 12 months... No media. For a movie
no new media. They'll replay it over and over again, but no new media, correct.
For a movie that...
Well, that and like, they have this podcast. There you go. Well, new weekly Joe right. Media right here, folks.
Yep.
Right.
Telling well, Hasbro you know they can't get their crap together.
The point I was going to make is...
No, go ahead. What were you going to say?
No. I was going to say that there's a year of no new media coming out for a movie that they're banking on, despite the fact that the first one wasn't a huge success. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, they've completely rejiggered the cast and everything, which is, to my mind, an obvious attempt to try and, you know, win people back in. But
right.
Although they kept Channing Tatum, who I'm pretty sure was one of the least liked characters in the first one.
He needed the money.
I don't know. It's all a bit... The whole thing is very strange. It's a really odd marketing choice. Mm-hmm. And G.I. Joe doesn't need odd marketing choices.
Yeah.
The only thing out of this whole thing I'm really disappointed in is, and I said it before in an earlier podcast, is that apparently we're not able to... The fandom is not able to tell the difference between a movie character and a Renegades character when other fandoms can clearly delineate between the two.
I don't know if it's a fandom thing or if it's a retail
thing. I don't know. I just kind of, on that thing, I take it a little personal because they did say, well, we don't want to confuse because of,
right.
Maybe it is a retailer thing. I mean, okay, maybe you're right.
They're concerned with the consumer and with the retailer.
And they're concerned with the average consumer, which is, right. And all things, in IT, when I deal with people in IT, you always got to kind of deal with the lowest common denominator in terms of how technical can you make things. So, again, I guess that makes sense when they're dealing with the lowest common denominator, which is, you know, average mom walking down the aisles. I don't know if this is a movie or a cartoon.
Right, wants to get her son a Duke.
One's Duke and one's the other Duke, and yeah.
Right, or sees a Renegades Duke and says, oh, that doesn't look like the Duke from the movie. That must not be him.
I'll give you that, but in terms of the fandom being able to figure out, I'm sure we can, other fandoms can. But I'm going to stop there and say I'm sure there's a reason why they're doing what they're doing.
Well, also, I think the other thing is we need to mention is the movie, the actual movie did okay. It made back its money. It made its profit. It made a profit. What failed was the toy. That was just, and you know, we can have a discussion for 3 hours on what went wrong with the toy line. The other thing is, it's funny you mention about, you know, movie Duke and non-movie Duke. Do you guys remember that one of the parts of the Rise of Cobra toy line that got canceled is that Target was going to capitalize, and their whole thing was going to be the Then and Now set, and there was actually going to be Then and Now figure sets where you had Movie Duke with 1983 Duke in a package, right. And you're going to have Movie Snake Eyes with 1982, 1983 Snake Eyes, and that got, you know, I mean, it was canceled, but...
I'm not so sure that was canceled more upon retail sales were already dying at that point.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing that's kind of good to know about as far as the Rise of Cobra toys go, sales numbers and marketing speak is it's not so cut and dry as it sold this many units compared to this many units. It's all about expectations. Something like the original, one thing that I've learned from different folks that I've talked to, the original Iron Man movie sold very few toys in actual numbers. But the thing was they produced so many fewer that they outsold expectations like crazy. So then what they do for Iron Man 2, they beefed up the numbers heavily, and now there's all this Iron Man 2 glut on the shelves that's not selling. G.I. Joe the Rise of Cobra sold very good numbers, but it did not come close to reaching the expectations they had, and some would argue that their expectations were probably unrealistic for a toy line that really hadn't been a top brand for a little while. So so numbers-wise, they did sell quite a bit, but expectations is where things got all screwed, and especially if you're talking about those first few waves, which were so crazily overordered and ended up glutting the shelves and kind of blocking them from the better stuff to come down.
Well, I mean that was Rise of Cobra. That was also the Iron Man 2 toys.
Exactly.
I mean,
yeah.
Oh, I mean, but again, that's something we can talk 3 hours on.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
All right. To our last question. This one's from Ryan. Ryan had a whole bunch of questions for us, but we'll just pick the most topic worthy one. He says, "I've asked about this before, but now I'd like to narrow it down. We know the first two figures of the subscription package from the club, but what are some other figures you'd like to see fill the list? And do you think that this might be the opportunity that Hasbro might be looking for to give the fans who didn't go to San Diego Comic-Con in 2010 to get a Sergeant Slaughter figure that they stated in their press release after the con that year?" Second question first, we're not going to see Sergeant Slaughter.
Sadly, no.
There's legal reasons for that, yeah.
Maybe a while before we see Sergeant Slaughter, if at all.
I mean, maybe when he dies. Yeah. I hate to say
that's
that,
nice.
But...
Yeah, that's morbid. Well, for the figures we'd like to see, we touched on it a little bit earlier, but I would be all about seeing some new sculpt figures. I'd like to see Crosshair, you know, Barrel Roll, Blackouts, Bomb Strike, Death Charge, you name it, from the new sculpt era. That would be, I think this would be a good chance to throw those back into the line. Maybe an updated Recoil. I think that'd be kind of cool. I don't want to see a whole lot of unreleased figures, because a lot of the stuff that isn't released, I think is a good choice that it was cut. Most of them are pretty, there's a reason people aren't clamoring for them so much that they do get released. So that's just my opinion.
I think from my perspective, one figure I really would hope they get out there in some way is Footloose. I'm not huge on the whole 25th anniversary regurgitation, but he's definitely a missing link in the 1985 roster, and they've obviously got the parts for him, so I would like to see him. I'm right there with Greg on some of those new sculpt figures. One thing I think is kind of unexplored that I'd love to see them kind of dip into is the whole thing with the plague that came about in the Devil's Due series, kind of the Cobra answer to the G.I. Joe original 13. They had their original 13 Cobra agents, which were, you know, a mixture of established Cobra characters and new characters who were kind of culled from the ranks of Cobra troopers and an anti G.I. Joe strike force. The parts would all be pretty basic. They pretty much wore, you know, commando turtleneck sweaters and different helmets, different web gear. It's very, very cool prospect, I think, that they could do some cool stuff with. But so that's another thing I'd kind of like to see. I don't know if we will or not. But some of that stuff would be cool. I'm with Greg. I don't want to see a whole lot of unreleased stuff. You know, there's some interesting things out there that I think would be cool. You know, I don't really care about seeing all of these different, you know, paint variations that didn't get released as is. And I would much rather see some kind of original concepts and some new directions, so to speak.
This is kind of tough for me because, you know, any of the fake characters I can come up with, I mean, these are guys I would like to see on a store shelf. But, I mean, I actually have a hard time coming up with, like, five Joes. But, like, for Cobra, I can come up with, like, Target, the Annihilator, both of them, the Iron Grenadiers, Heavy Metal, who was also, like, Destro's Lieutenant Commander in the Iron Grenadiers. I think there was, like, a Toxo Viper. I wouldn't mind seeing him. And who was that? Crystal Ball. There you go. I mean, that's a guy that would be, I think, perfect for the subscription figures.
CFB approves. CFB approves.
I figure that everybody hates. Yeah, that'd be perfect. Good
question. Everybody hates Crystal Ball?
Except for one person.
Except for one that I know of. He's been inducted into the CFB, the Crappy Figure Brigade, as their founding father, so. Says something.
I actually had Crystal Ball. I thought he was kind of cool as a kid.
I like him, too. I think he's kind of neat.
For me, we'll just pick one. I know we're running long on time here. I'll just pick one Joe and one Cobra or one villain. Iron Claw. I do really want to see that. It's a crossing over into a new universe that we haven't been in yet, and we know the tooling exists for it, so I'd like to see that. And unfortunately, it's much to my own chagrin, we're going to see a Cover Girl. It's not what I really, really want, but I know we're going to see it because with Sparta out there and everyone asking for Cover Girl, it just almost seems like a foregone conclusion. We're going to get a Cover Girl, so I might as well go ahead and accept the inevitable, because that way when the list finally is released, and she may or may not be on there, that at least it won't be much of a fanboy shocking response that I will give.
All right, and that was our last question for the mailbag. Like I said earlier, we had a few that we weren't going to be able to fit in, but we'll answer them in the usual manner. Thanks again for everybody that wrote in. We had some awesome questions and some good discussions. So it was good just kind of to clean up the mailbag and talk about a bunch of random stuff, which we haven't had a lot of chance to do lately. So,
hey, I don't get a chance to pull out the soapbox very often. but I'll do it now. I'm not typically a big defender of the club. We've had our own differences in the past, but those that I have spoken with at the club have always been responsive to me. So, in terms of people that I'm dealing with, they're genuinely good people. But I think the community as a whole should give the club a little slack on this whole subscription thing. It's flooded their Facebook page to the point where you can't leave comments anymore. It got to the point where it was a little ridiculous. There's, you know, threads out there saying this and that with speculation, and no one really has a clue what's going on. Guys, I don't have a clue what's going on. I will say this, they have a lot on their plate right now. They got to announce a con site. They got to announce a free figure here soon. They're starting a membership run. They got to get the subscription figures out. They got a lot on their plate. It's a small operation. Cut them a little slack. Just give them a little bit of patience. And I think that in due time, rather quickly due time, we will probably get all the answers we seek.
Yeah, it's well said. And one thing that I think the fans really kind of got to realize and understand is that the club isn't just dealing with us. They've got to deal with big, faceless, nameless, billion-dollar mega corporation Hasbro, and they've got to, they're liaison between us and between Hasbro, so to speak. You got to know that every single one of those 13 figures that they're going to announce eventually, and they will announce them eventually before they take payments for these subscription figures. Every single one of those 13 figures probably has to go through like 8 layers of clearance at Hasbro before they can even announce anything. They are under pressure not just from the fans to get this information out there, but they're under pressure from Hasbro as well to not let that information get out there. They have signed a contract with Hasbro, and they've probably signed confidentiality agreements saying that if this stuff gets out there, there could be legal ramifications. So if you're upset that your post on their Facebook is being deleted, well, there might be legal reasons for that. They've got a whole lot of stuff that they've got to deal with on that side as well as on our side. Now, I mean, in the collector's defense, I mean, they brought it on themselves. They are voluntarily running the club. They knew what they were getting into when they started. So yes, in that way, they have these expectations. They know what they're doing. They seek out these contracts, so they should know what to expect. Yes. But as fans, we got to get the point and kind of back off a little bit. And like Gary said, have a little patience. Let them do their thing. They will announce these things. They have said time and time again that they are going to announce them. They would, I'm sure if you asked everybody who works for the club, if they want to announce the figure lineup, they're going to say, yes, I'd like to announce it right now. They want to get us off their backs.
Monkey on back. Off, please. Yeah.
Exactly. They want to announce it. If they're not announcing it, there's a reason why they're not announcing it, and it probably has to do with the clearance they got to get from Hasbro to do it. They've got all this legal red tape, all this corporate BS. They've got to deal with it on one end while dealing with the crazed fandom on the other. So there are all sorts of things that the fandom at large just doesn't understand, and I'm not trying to speak as an elitist because I'll tell you, I don't understand. I don't know what they go through on a daily basis. I can only imagine what they go through, but just kind of what I've gleaned from my years of talking with them and seeing how the convention is run and kind of hearing different interactions here and there. They deal with a lot more than we think. They're not just a bunch of guys in their little ivory tower kind of calling the shots. They answer to a much higher power than we do, and really are kind of at their beck and call and at their whim. And what Hasbro says goes, and if they want to keep their jobs and if they want to keep their company afloat, they got to do what Hasbro says. So, like Gary said, just cut them a little slack. They will tell us when they're ready, and obviously something is not ready. And if they gave us information now, it would be premature, and something could change, and then people would get even more upset. So let's just ease off the gas pedal a little bit and give them a chance to let us know officially before we start jumping all over these mythical lists that are floating out there that may or may not be accurate.
All I really want to add to that is that I think the key word is patience. The longer this takes, I think the better it will be for the fandom. And also, really, I speak to the listeners, I speak to everyone who's interested, do we really want to be grouped in with the Masters of the Universe collectors?
I thought you were going to say, do we really want to be grouped in as the Transformers collectors? I'll go like, bravo, Chuck!
No, you want Masters of the Universe, I agree.
You know, that how they go nuts over their subscription. I can tell you right now, if the club was to announce today the figures and everything, this subscription service will be run 10 times better than what Mattel does. The fact that it's taking longer is only mean it's only going to be better. So just relax. Good things will come to those who wait, and save your money for when, you know, it's time to pay and to sign up for it.
Yeah, I think on the positive side of all this, the fact that people are bugging the crap out of the club, asking questions, it's a sign that people are very excited for what's going to come out.
Yes.
They just want to know. And I mean, there's a, what, like a 16-page thread on Joe Customs about it to get the fans that excited about something, you know, that people are very curious to see where this goes and what the cost is and what we're going to see. So anything that gets fans back and interested in the brand and in the line, that's always a good thing in my opinion.
Yep, it's generating excitement, that's for sure. And I will never begrudge the fans for being excited. I'm excited as hell. But yeah, you gotta temper that with a little bit of realistic expectations and kind of give the club the chance to get their ducks in a row before giving us information that's not accurate.
Okay. Before we wrap this up, Chuck, did you want to give a shout-out to somebody that gave us some airtime this week?
Oh, yes, I did. I have to give a big shout-out and thank you to the guys over at the Atomic Martians videocast. They're on YouTube, www.youtube.com/AtomicMartians. They actually gave a shout out to me, but they also gave a shout out to the podcast. One of the hosts of it is a big fan of the show. He loves it, and I just want to say thanks. And if you get a chance, go check these guys out. They're hysterically funny. They usually review two toys an episode. It's no more than 20 minutes, and you know, like I said, they're funny as all heck. And give them a shot.
Greg, your shout out.
I got to mention the gentleman that did the graphic that we're doing for keeping track of the hits and how much we're going to donate for Toys for Tots. His name is Ed, and he did just a phenomenal job. I gave him a really basic idea of what I wanted to see, and he just, pardon the pun, he knocked it out of the park.
Oh, that was fantastic. Yeah, he did an awesome job.
Great graphic with Hardball and Grand Slam in there. So,
yep, he did a fantastic job. He wanted me to just plug his portfolio website real quick. It's zombieomega.com, which he's in the process of putting that together. And he goes by Airtight in the Joe community, and he has some...
Zombie Omega. I know a lot of people from the Omega family.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I do. Maybe they
SK's
might...
SK's brother?
SK Bandolero? Does that ring a bell at all? He might be making an appearance on the show sometime.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
We're definitely not doing a video call for that one.
No, not a video call, but he might be leaving voicemail at some point. Hey, I got a couple of shout-outs because I'm – well, Justin was actually working on DR all week. Not so much with me because I got some time because I'm an IT guy and sit in front of a computer and I can hear other podcasts. I would like to thank a couple for making mention of the show. Shout-out this week goes to the D-Team podcast. Among Joe, they talk about Joe Disney and the WWE, which I'm pretty sure that they have the Joe Mouse and Sports Entertainment podcast demographic nailed.
That's an interesting combination.
But all kidding aside, they actually launched their podcast before ours. And as life would have it, they had a small hiatus between the last two episodes, but they're back now. They mentioned this mentioned us toward the end of their last show. So we appreciate that. Check it out on iTunes if you get a chance. I will say the host uses the word Joverse way too much for my liking. Now on to the Joverse. It's like it's nails on a board. Oh, God, Joverse. Another podcast. I can mute you. The next podcast.
You can. Why haven't you done it sooner?
I'm really, really nice. See, that's the
Teach
thing.
Me people how to do that.
The next podcast is called It Figures. They are part of the Pop Culture Network. And in episode 116, they mention What's on Joe Mind and actually drop our site in reference to getting questions and some answers about the Collectors Club subscription. I love the show. They also do a video podcast of it while they do their audio podcast, which is nice. While you're at it here at What's on Joe Mind, if you're listening to us on Podbean, It Figures is part of the Pop Culture Network, and they're on Podbean as well, so pop open another tab. I like the show a lot, and they did a good job, and they definitely got their answers squared away on the subscription figure. Because the subscription program has a lot of misinformation out there. Have you noticed that, guys?
Oh, yeah.
It's just all over the place. While you guys are listening to podcasts, you can catch me on episode 6 of Flag Points coming up here in a week or so. They've invited me on, so I will be on there with them.
Sweet.
Sell out.
Yeah. Since there's been a lot of misinformation out there, if anybody is doing another toy podcast or anything related to Joe and they want to bring on a Joe guest, hey, we're your hired guns. Go ahead and give Chuck, Justin, Greg an email, and we'd love to come on your show if you have to want to talk about the subscription or is kind of setting a lot of this information straight, because we know there's a lot of fans out there that aren't diehard Joe-only fans, but they're interested in the subscription or maybe the club or maybe the con or maybe the hobby as a whole.
control and they're not quite sure what's going on, invite us on. We'll be more than happy. We are your Hudson Institute think tank of G.I. Joe, okay? There you go.
All right.
That's our public service announcement to the greater podcasting community.
We are whores. Take advantage of us.
Yeah, actually, I think I might have stooped to your level now, Justin.
All right. I also wanted to mention something. We've got, as we sit here now, we are recording episode number 19. As Joe fans are well aware, Chuck might not be aware, being the Sunbow fanboy that he is.
There you go.
But the number 21 holds some significance for Joe fans, especially for the comic fans. And we're trying to get something pretty special prepared for our episode 21. And no, it's not going to be an all-silent episode. I promise that.
Darn.
We are endeavoring to get the godfather of G.I. Joe himself, Larry Hama, on the show as a guest for the 21st episode, which would not air this week or next week, but the week after. We have been in contact with him and have been setting it up. He is excited to do it. He did have a little bit of side effects from Hurricane Irene, which has kind of put a cramp on scheduling a little bit, but we are still hoping to get something together and get a nice little talk with him for episode 21. So that's definitely something to look forward to as we look forward over the next couple of weeks. So hopefully people will stay tuned and look forward to that. I know we are all very much looking forward to talking to him for a little while. We'll see where it goes. We'll keep everybody posted. If for some reason something falls through, we'll let you guys know. But as of right now, it's on target. So that's what we're shooting for.
Chuck, how excited are you?
I'm very excited. And I just like to add, without giving anything away, that since next week is our 20th episode, and since that is also technically an official milestone, just to all the listeners, if you follow me on Twitter, keep an eye on your Twitter feed and keep an eye on the What the Chuck fan page. I have something planned, and all I'm going to say is, if you are not a subscribed member to Ustream, I highly recommend that you sign up. It's a free service.
Videos involved?
I'm not saying anything more. But I gotta say, I really am excited to have Larry Hama on. He's I'm a friend of his on Facebook, and you know, every now and then he will drop just like a little nugget, a little page from the past, and it's just so wonderful listening to him speak. You know, his passion for the Joe brand, interviews with him. You know, he really does appreciate all the love he gets, and you know, he seems like a really cool guy, and you know, he also plays guitar. You know, I mean, for all we know, the interview, you know, between he and I, the interview can turn into like a whole so how do you, you know, what's your favorite scale to play over a, you know, an A minor 7th chord?
You totally got to do the dueling banjos, man.
I said guitar, not
deliverance banjos.
Well, you know, it's funny. There's a photo of him on his Facebook page. He was actually playing a ceramic Fender Stratocaster. I don't think he has that guitar anymore, but I have like a Fender Strat. So, you know, if there's some way we can work it out, we might actually, you know, plug in and, you know, make a little noise for the podcast.
Well, Chuck, you might actually like, since you're a big guitar guy, you might actually like the closing song we're using this week. John Chu, every now and then, when he tweets, he'll reference like a song and he'll send you to another webpage that allows you to listen to songs that are attached to a tweet. This is an interesting, definitely a guitar one. Tony Joe White and his song Boom Boom. Have you never heard of that?
Is it Boom Boom out Goes the Lights?
No, not Boom Boom Out Goes the Lights. A little bit before that, Chuck. But it's definitely a lot of guitar. It's a little blues guitar going on. So I thought the fans might appreciate that, since it actually has a tie-in with the John Chu tweet from the movie. So.
There you go.
All right. So, Greg, is it true that your softball uniform has pink frills around the shoulders?
Oh, boy,
the,
here we go.
I heard something about buttless chaps.
Yeah.
That is not allowed in the league.
are you? Is it a pasture?
How about during practice?
We talk about
practice. No, we love sound bites.
Eventually, it's just going to be a 90-minute show with just sound bites.
Allen Iverson, yeah,
just talking over us the entire time.
Well, you got to make sure you're ready for the playoffs.
Crazy. Let's go.
Let's see, that wraps it up for this episode. Chuck Hush, talk to us at whatsonjoemind@gmail.com. Call or text us at 262-515-WOJM. Again, those last four at 9656. You can read about us at facebook.com.
slash What's On Joe Mine. On Facebook, you'll find a link to our podcast, or excuse me, our Podbean site, where you can find links for all of our social networking profiles, active forum threads from such forums such as the Fighting 118th, TNI, the Terradrome, and the G.I. Joe Collectors Club, if you can find it.
It's a low blow, Gary.
Download our show at iTunes, Inside Pulse, and Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it for free in your app store at Stitcher or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher, Smart Radio, and What's On Joe Mine? We are the smarter way to listen to radio. Check out GeekCast Radio for other great flagship podcasts such as Telecast, Movie Week in Review, TuneCast Beyond, and GeekCast Radio. Find them all at GeekCastRadio.com and unleash the geek in you today. Next week, I don't know what we're doing next week. We don't have any guests yet, but I guess we'll have more mail and voicemails answer, right?
Excellent.
Maybe. Okay.
Well, somebody starts up another musical.
That was awesome. Greg will catch us up on all that. They were awesome. Yeah. And naturally, if you would all, anybody would like to contribute, feel free to send in those mails, text messages, and voicemails, and we'll answer them. We'll have that along with any news of the week, new product sightings, and our regular friendly Joe banter, so don't miss it. If anyone else has anything else, we gone?
We gone.
We gone. Once again, I'd like to thank our special guests, Jay Gish and Dave Stecco of the production Yo Joe, a real American hip-hop musical. So for our guests, Jay and Dave, for our showrunner, Greg, co-host, Craig, who had to leave early, but he said bye, Justin and Chuck, I'm Gary, saying to all our men and women serving, God bless, Godspeed, and come home safe, we miss you. Good night, folks. We'll see you next week for another episode of What's On Joe Mine.
See ya.
Good night.
Right off my feet. Boom, boom, boom. Boom, boom, boom. Gonna shoot you right down.